We're at the YMCA on Cleveland Street. And so right behind me is, if you were looking down, is the pool where we had our first baptism. We would climb in the water and our whole church would gather around and watch. And so I still think back to it of how much it caught us off guard and how powerful it was. And I think set the stage for so many more baptisms that we would have in our future. And on this side of me is no longer there, but was the old aerobics room, which is where we met the first time we came to the Y for 7 months. And we helped renovate the nursery. We moved chairs in and out every week. Setup was a big deal. It was great. We grew here. We had no problem calling any building our church that we met at. And so I would drive down the road with my 4-year-old and my 2-year-old, and they would say, "Oh, that's our first church. Oh, that's our second church." And so they would call this our second church. As I think about the Y, setting up all those chairs on Saturday night, setting up a sound system, setting up a stage. And so that was a lot of hard work. And our congregation was tired. We were very tired. We were trying to disciple people. We were trying to minister to folks. We were having small groups. They were growing. We were trying to develop leaders. We were trying to preach books of the Bible. We were developing a worship team. We were singing. And we had people whose lives were falling apart, and we were trying to hold all that together. And then we're setting up every Saturday night. And it was tough and it was hard. And now we look back, and a lot of those people who set up on Saturday night look back on that with these just incredible fond memories of being together and throwing chairs at one another and just having a great time setting up. But we were really, really tired when that season came to an end. But when I ride by here, second church, it brings back great memories also of when a core group really had to come together and begin to serve together and sacrifice together. And we really became a church because people's lives started falling apart and we had to be there for them. We had to take care of them. We had to get them through some really difficult situations. And so families were growing, we were having children, but it was a great time of, I would say, more than numerical growth. The Y represents for me real spiritual growth, where we were really having to pour out. We were teaching through Genesis, we were teaching through Acts, we were really establishing the DNA of our church. And so those are some of the memories I have from being here.
All right. My name is Matt Williams. I'll be leading this this weekend. We are calling our congregation to a lifestyle of generosity and obedience, to be generous and obedient with everything that God has given us, everything that He's entrusted to us. And so we're looking at part of our history because we're also talking about part of our future. And so we're casting some vision for the next 2 years. And what does it take for our church to make a few steps, a few moves forward, and what the strategy for that is going to be, and how challenging that's going to be, and also how exciting that's going to be. So, last week we launched this idea. We talked about the book of Acts, chapter 2, and it's kind of the birth video of the church, and we were looking at it and saying, does this look like our church? And so we want to be able to line our church up next to Acts 2 and go look at the, not necessarily the applications, but the principles. This principle is here and now it's here. This principle is here and now it's here. We want to be able to do that with our church and with, when we line it up against Acts 2, but we also want to be able to do it with our lives and line our lives up against the mirror of Acts 2, and hopefully it matches up. Some of the challenging things that we're saying is if my relationship with the church is that of, is it that of a friendship or is it that of an acquaintance? And so we got to ask that question to our body. I got to ask that question for myself. Is that, am I functioning like a friendship that has this deep, abiding fellowship, or are we functioning up here on the surface like acquaintances? If it were a marriage, is this a relationship in our marriage where we are devout, where we are devoted to each other, or is it an open relationship? Doesn't mean we don't have a relationship, it just means that it's more complex, there's more people involved, it's more shallow, it's not as deep, it's not as loyal, it's not as devout. So those are relational images. And I recognize that Greenville has the highest concentration of engineers per capita of any place in the United States. And so the relational images help so many of us, right? But for some of us, not so much. We're a little more objective, a little more analytical. So let me give something for you. One of the words that I used last week was And are you an integral part of the church, or are you, and I use this word that got made fun of all week long, tangential? Are you a tangent? So let me show you what a tangent is if you are a math person. I have a slide for this. I'll bring this up real quick. The white curve is the flow, okay? That's the line. The red line is the tangent line because it only crosses the line at one point. They only touch at one point. So if the white line, the curve, if that's the church, then the question is, are you a tangent to the church where you just touch at one point, or do you follow the life and flow of the church? All right? So there we go. Relational, analytical. You can't get this teaching just anywhere, right? You are learning things. So we gave out a brochure in an effort to communicate. It gives some of our history over the last year and longer. It gives some communication about some of the things we want to accomplish over the next 2 years. If you don't have that, we want to give that to you probably before the service on all our campuses and also be available after the service. We got enough so everybody in our church, so every family in our church can have one. It's pretty important that you read, that you think, that you be able to ask questions. And we want to answer every single question. Because what we're wanting to do starting in April is pull our resources together and give for the next 2 years in a strategic way to this 2-year plan, this 2-year budget. Not a capital campaign where I'm writing one check here and one check there and one check over there. It's one fund, one church, one ministry, and we're giving to this in a strategic way. And I'll talk more about that in a minute, right? But we are, just like we invite people to come to Discovery or Foundations, to be a part of a community group, to serve, to be a part of Roundtable or Azare, to go on a retreat, to do premarital counseling, to be a part of a parenting class. We're constantly inviting people into the life of the church. The financial side is no different, okay? It's all very much the same. So what I'll do is I will walk you through some of the major aspects of what we gave out last week. Because some of you have read it, some of you hadn't, and you won't be lost. Let me just walk you through part of the story. And I'm going to give you a handful of pages and just highlight those pages. So on page 4, you get the story of Anna Marshall. And so we got a bunch of young guys in college looking at that. Let me just tell you something. Her daddy is a bear. He will eat you. All right, so you calculate well what you're thinking and where you're headed right there. This is a sweet girl. Her family came to our church when she was in fourth grade. And so we had an opportunity to invest in her and her family. She was a part of our children's ministry, our student ministry. And then she grows up, as children do, and goes to Anderson University. And so now she is a part of our Powdersville campus. And so we take seriously, it's why we have facilities for students and children, we take seriously the challenge to us from Deuteronomy to teach our children as families and as a church to disciple, because the Bible describes children as arrows that get released. They are powerful and they get released and they go out not to be victims, but to accomplish, to penetrate the world, to engage the world. So our goal was to equip her and as we do all our children and students for a life of ministry and a life that is aware of the great challenges of what it means to live the Christian life. And so that's part of the role and responsibility of our church. And here's what you'll see when you get to that section of the brochure. So we have over 1,700 adults serving in our church. You can't be a disciple and not serve. Over 150 serve in student ministry. That's over 670 serving in children's ministry. And so we have ministries on our campus and off of our campus where people serve. And so our attendance has grown. That is true. But what's more important is that we are getting people involved in the life of ministry and we are serving like disciples do. On page 7, we have the story of the Altums, Joey and Charlie Altum. And so we have their story. And they didn't come to our Pelham Road campus. They came to our Powdersville campus after we expanded. The reason that we went to Powdersville was because that was a group of people that were having a hard time. They lived there. They were driving 20, 25 minutes from Powdersville to Greenville, and they couldn't get their friends to come with them. And you can't keep your students connected when they're that far away from this campus. So it's a big experiment. We launched our Powdersville campus. And it has just been incredible. an incredible opportunity. So we have all these folks there who are passionate about their community, reaching their community, and the Altums are a product of that. And the Altums themselves are very passionate about their community. And so now we have one church, four campuses. We are spread out, yet we are local. We are reaching folks in their community, the Altums. He leads a small group of students and helps lead a community group. And so what's interesting is, as our church has gotten larger, and now some of our numbers the last few weeks have been over 4,000 people, every time our church gets larger, right, it also has to get smaller. For every step that's bigger, there has to be a step that's smaller. Because the goal is not for us to accumulate or to acquire massive amounts of people. That's not what God called us to do. Now, if you're going to go and reach people, then there are most likely people are going to be added to the number, the fellowship. Going to get added those, like it says in Acts, they were added to the fellowship that day, 3,000, which would be a lot. But as we get bigger, we also have to get smaller. So it's why we know that God called us, not necessarily to get larger, but we know that He called us to disciple and to shepherd. And so this is why we have community groups and community group leaders and then community group pastors and then campus pastors at each of our campuses. And this is how discipleship and shepherding takes place. It's why names like Dan Dather and Patrick Sheely and Scott Freeman and Scott Nelson, it's why these names are important, because they carry the weight of shepherding and discipleship in our church, because we know that's what God has called us to do. Then on page 9, you get the story of the Stipes, Craig and Ashley. I just saw Craig this week before he headed to Eleuthera. But their story is one of being equipped, where we talk about, Craig can talk about men's roundtable and learning what it means to be passive and learning how to move. Ashley can talk about Azair and what does it mean to be autonomous and how you react and how you act and how you live in this world and how you show initiative, yet have a spirit that's very honoring. And so it's just what we're called to do is to equip people. And so Ephesians 4 says you're going to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. You got to equip them for life and for ministry. That relates to every aspect of life. And so financially in our congregation, starting 2 years ago, we realized that so many of our people had consumer debt, so we were not equipping them to deal with their debt. So now we're 2 years later, have over $1.2 million in personal debt that has been eradicated, over $1.3 million that has been saved, that have gone into people's savings accounts. Now, those numbers are really, really limited because they really only relate to the time that people were in those classes. There are weeks and months after those classes where those numbers are much larger, but we just don't have what those numbers are. But this is what happened over the last couple of years just during our class times. We're really excited about that. There are opportunities that we have that are equipping that relate to ministry, which don't relate to everybody. But we believe that we're supposed to help raise up a next generation and a new generation of leaders, which means interns that come here in the summer. It means interns that come here for the year. It means a residency program that we have. It means a fellowship program. And I know you're like, I don't care about what all that is. Here's what I would tell you. It is an infusion of young people coming into our church for 3 months, a year, 9 months. Sometimes they stay. Sometimes they go to other places and they serve. But it is really, really important that we be an equipping church. And here's what I would tell you that you don't know about, is that our church is helping mentor, disciple, and influence churches in a number of other states. And so I would just pin through it. North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, and Arkansas. We have a pastor from a church in Arkansas called me a month ago, and he said, I got a sabbatical coming up this summer. Can I come spend 3 days with you and your staff? And I was like, well, I don't know. He said, I just want to come learn. I promise if it costs you anything, our church will reimburse you. I just want to sit in a staff meeting. I want to sit in this kind of meeting. I want to ask these questions. A friend of a friend told me about your church. And so we are getting to have influence with other churches, and they're not doing what we're doing. That's not the goal. They shouldn't come imitate what we do, just that God has taught us things, and we're the body of Christ, and we're all working together. When you give here, that's what you're doing. You're helping support and disciple and mentor other churches, and we've had other churches do that for us for years. Our staff has flown all over the country to learn from other churches. So this is a great, beautiful part of the body of Christ. On page 10, you have the story of the Bells. And so they have a passion for doing ministry locally, whether it's here in Greenville on a Greenville mission trip or in Allendale. It's a great powerful influence for their children. When you go do something and you bring your children with you, they get to see that you don't just talk, but you are actually living it. And so it's what we would call local missions or domestic missions. And so in Luke 10, Jesus says, you cannot really say that you love God and that you follow me and live in a world and turn your face away from people who are suffering. You cannot just walk by someone who's suffering and not get your hands dirty, not get involved. And he gives an illustration of the Good Samaritan in Luke 10 to illustrate that. And it's why we do boxes of love. It's why we do adopt a child at Christmas. It's why we send hundreds of volunteers through Hog Day. It's why we're involved in a number of inner city ministries. It's why we are involved in something like Nashaw Lending, helping entrepreneurs who are underfunded kind of make their way and make a path. It's why we are getting deep roots in the Bel Air community. It's part of the inner city of Greenville. And so we are actually getting some ownership in that ministry, in that community, to do some urban renewal. And so we're really excited about that. And this is part of the church's role, is to create opportunities like this. And the Bells are a perfect example of those who've jumped on it. Then on page 13, you see a story of Tom Fowler. Tom and I go back a long ways, and he has been a great mentor and help to me and to our church. But I kept saying to him, you need to go to Nicaragua and help us train pastors. And he would say, no. And finally, this wouldn't mean much to some of you, but from Tom's church background, finally I looked at him one day and I said, here's the thing. I said, I am asking you as an elder to go to Nicaragua. And he goes, I hear you. I'll go. And so for him, he comes from a church background where that means something. Like I said, for most of you, it means nothing. But for him, that's serious work right there. When I say as an elder, I'm asking you to do this, then he does it. I get down there. I'm on that trip, but I get there late because I have to preach here on Sunday because I work all the time. So I fly down there Sunday night. When I go to his class, I finish my class early so I can go sit in his class. And we're in the heat. We're in the middle of nowhere in these classrooms, open air flowing through. And I go watch him for the last 10 minutes of his class. And when he's done, he walks out and looks at me. And I said, you were born to do this, weren't you? He goes, yes. I had no idea. And I was like, I did. Once again, do what I say. Listen to me. Right? So I've never let him live that down. The one time in our relationship, I was right. He's been right the 10,000 other times. I was finally right once. And so this is his story. And now we're coming to a year and a half mark of a two-year curriculum where he is helping train 60 pastors, where his translator keeps his notes and then goes and starts college ministry on different campuses in Managua. I mean, the things that God is doing, you can't even get your mind around it. For Bernard Cabarro, who stood on our stage in Pelham Road and has taught here, that we are, he is a national in Kenya. We support him. We encourage him. We help train the pastors that he raises up. When I go to Kenya, when our staff goes there, we are underneath him. He's the leader in that country. We're there to support and encourage. And so what we are doing here is we are training pastors. We are doing medical mission trips. We are doing construction trips. Whatever gets us in the door. For Alcides Fuentes, who just taught in Powdersville a couple weeks ago, he is helping train Hispanic, Latino pastors to go to the Muslim world because the Muslim world does not view them as a threat. So we're helping support that. Matthew 28 said, go into all nations. That's what we're trying to do. We have strategic partnerships around the world that are really important. God has brought us opportunities that even 6 years ago, we would not have been able to imagine or believe. We knew that there was going to be some really cool things, but we didn't know what it was, but we would have never been able to envision this. And here's what's happened, is that we feel like we've gone out and created and experimented without talking about it very much because we didn't know what God was doing. And then God has confirmed, these are great ideas. Here, that didn't work, but this did. And now we see all this ministry. And so part of it is, from a staff perspective, I feel like we are climbing massive mountains, Everest, we're climbing with dental floss. And what we need is just some more resources to help us do, not to go do something new necessarily, just to do what we're already doing, but just be able to do it real well. Just to be able to take it to the next level, to the next step. So we're looking at the next 2 years, and we're saying, what does it cost for us to move forward over the next 2 years? What does our congregation have to do? And on page 14, you'll see this. I think Kevin Jones is featured there. But at the top, you'll see the big, and you can't read all this, you don't need to, but you'll see 1883 on the left and 917 on the right. That's a display of the basically 2,800 adults that are in our church. And here's the truth of it, is that there's 1,883 adults who are giving. They are a part of something that is bigger than themselves. But on the other side of that spectrum, there's over 900, who essentially give nothing. And part of what we want to communicate over the next 2 weeks is that that is hurting our church because something's being withheld. But more importantly, those folks are hurting themselves. And I think it's what I talked about last week. It's a lack of vision. It's a lack of teaching. But it also may be a divided heart. And so we have to deal with that. We should have to think through it. We have to ask ourselves some hard questions. And so we have a third of our folks, you know, half right there, are just not participating. Maybe they don't know. But we need to explain how this can be a benefit to them and a benefit to our church. Of the 1,880 that give, now get this, 700 of those are giving less than $1,000 a year. I mean, so you just go, they're spending more on cell phone and cable than they're spending on God's work. And so we're not being harsh. We're just telling you, we've worked hard to kind of whittle down and get some conservative numbers to understand. And let me just tell you how faithful you go. Well, are you whining and complaining? Not at all. In fact, that's the farthest thing for what I feel intuitively. Because here's what I know. And around 04, 05, 1,200 people was what our congregation had, borrowed over $6 million. And I went home after we signed those papers and I thought, good Lord, what are we doing? Lord, save us now. Rapture us out of this or something. If there's not a rapture, create one. Something. What are we doing? And here's what I would tell you. We're 6 years later and that debt is less. Now get this piece. The debt, we paid into the debt to beat it down. All right, and that's always been the goal, is that it would be for a season and we'd get rid of it. In that time where we've reduced that debt, we've added over 3,000 people. See, most businesses or organizations or churches, to add more people, they have to go take on more debt or they have to do all this. We haven't done a capital campaign during that time. We haven't gone out and raised a bunch of money. You know, just little things here and there. But we haven't gone to the bank and borrowed more and said, well, you know, we're at $6 million. We're going to have another $4 million to grow. We have tripled our size in 6 years, not just not taking on more debt, but actually reducing the debt that we have, which was part of the goal. And it's just that God has been that faithful, and the core of our church has been that faithful. And we have launched more campuses. We've put together partnerships in different places of the world. We've launched a ministry in Allendale. All those things have been done. We have had buildings given to us. I mean, I'd be the last one that can complain. We have buildings given to us. You wouldn't believe how much stuff gets given to us or done for us. If you want these cool magic boards where you write, we teach a lot of classes here, and so we'll have these big whiteboards. Well, you need to be able to move them from room to room. If you buy one of those on wheels, it costs like $600. So we buy them for $100, and we have volunteers in our church build frames for them that we can wheel from room to room. So for $150, if we instead of paying $600, we pay $150. I mean, I could go through 100 examples of on the smallest detail of how God has shown us how to conserve our resources and be a blessing. And so it's really, really exciting. But we also want to talk about the reality of the situation, is that we have half of our church is not giving or not giving significantly. And so we want to make a case for why you should if you don't think that you should be. On page 17, we list some of the things that we want to do over the next 2 years. And here's what I tell you. We are not dreaming. Everything on here, we are actually already doing. Except for maybe one or two things. We're doing them maybe in a small way, and we just would do it in a larger way. At the very top, there's the idea of debt reduction. We would love to wipe out our debt, but at least in the next 2 years, we'd like to take $1.5 million off of that and just reduce it before the loan has to be refinanced. Campus expansion. Powdersville needs a permanent home. And so we're looking for old churches and old warehouses that we can renovate, but we may have to build a building out there. We have over 500 people. We've been able to bypass three or four stages of growth. And so, but now we're going to have to find a place to create a permanent home in the next year to 2 years. I know our contract at the high school doesn't last another 2 years. I'm just saying, right? God's going to have to work something out. We'd like to plant a church in Charleston. We have the Golden Strip campus that is launching in the next couple weeks. We have people in Spartanburg wanting us to put a campus there. We have folks in Blue Ridge talking about putting a campus there. There are just a lot of opportunities for campus expansion. The body of Grace Church, this is really, really important. Over the next couple years, we may have as many as 5,000 people in our church. You go, well, what are we going to, we got to advertise to get them? We do not advertise. That's not what we're doing. For us, growth is a byproduct of discipleship. So we don't know that we're called to grow to a certain size, but we know that we are called to shepherd and disciple people. And so for whoever God brings us, we want to shepherd them and disciple them. We want to train our leaders. We want to develop them, and that creates new opportunities. So we have to put resources into that. For the upstate, is that God has given us opportunities right here, right where we live. And so we want to be a part of helping transform a neighborhood like Bel Air. Is that we want to, most folks don't know this, is that on every Sunday, we are in 3 or 4 assisted living facilities, preaching and leading worship. So we have people who never come to our church, who are older, who don't have access to leave where they are and come to church. And so we take church to them. And so we do that every week. You go, oh my goodness, that's so hard. It's work, but it's not. No, it's not that hard. And we want to do it for them because here's the thing. We need someone who's going to do it for us one day. It's going to be us. Right? And I mean, when you come to me, when I'm 80 years old, if I ever live to be that long, and I'm in that facility, you better come and you better play the songs that I like. I don't want any new songs. And if you do, I'm going to throw my Bible at you. Right? And so we think that we can go to 8 sites. Right now we're at 3 or 4 sites. We think over the next 2 years we can be at 8 sites. And that will be really important. And it's a great expression of what we're doing here. Regionally, we have ministry in Allendale that has become very important to the life of our church and to that county. We want to see students from Allendale High School not get pregnant while they're in high school, and we want to see them go to college, and then we want to see them get good jobs, and we want to see them have a life, whether they ever accept Christ or not. And we are presenting the gospel. But even if they choose to be non-Christians, we want to help with that. Some of that may mean building a community center down there, helping rally some resources from some other folks to do that. So there are lots of opportunities. Internationally, it goes on and on. In Kenya, we have the opportunity to partner with a pastor and a church that works with Bernard that has access to over 100 orphans. And so it's called OVC, Orphans or Vulnerable Children. And so this is not a pipe dream or an idea. This actually, the church exists, the orphans exist. The question is how well funded are they? And do they have a partner? And right now they don't. That partner should be us. What Compassion International is doing, that's great. But we get to do that through the local church and help them, not just with education, but help them on 4 or 5 different areas. Spiritually, relationally, socially, they've lost their parents to HIV/AIDS, and now we get to step in and partner and be a part of the solution there. We have a partner in Nicaragua who needs to plant a church. We are waiting for him to get clear in his head, but we know he's supposed to plant a church. The opportunities in Eleuthera for affecting that island for change and also training our leaders, it's great. We would like to initiate a partnership with someone in Europe. Our Pelham Road campus is right next to Michelin, right next to BMW. We have folks coming from all over the world to the east side of Greenville, particularly, and that's true all over the upstate, but particularly right here. And so there is some connection here that needs to be thought out, that needs to be pursued. And so the idea of connecting with Europe seems like a reasonable idea. If you look on page 16, you'll see a big graph. It's a little complex, so you start pulling it apart, and you can do that later. But at the center of that, to do everything we'd like to do for the next 2 years is $15.7 million, which seems like a lot of money. The reason that seems like a lot of money is because it is a lot of money, okay? That's not a figment of your imagination. We call it one fund because it's one fund. It's not a capital campaign where there's a building fund over here and a mission fund over here and an operating budget over here. Everything that we do is ministry. And so for Vicky and me, we write one check a month. You might write one check a week, 2 checks a month. I don't know what you do. But for us, it's one check a month. And it'll always be one check a month. All right? It's not going to be one check here and then above and beyond for one fund. It's just what we're giving is what we're giving. And so what we're asking our church to do is to look at the next 2 years and say, what does God want us to do? And whatever that is what it is. Look at the last 2 years and go, here's what we've been doing the last 2 years. Now let's think strategically about the next 2 years. And then here's what we're going to give. This is the number. We're going to divide that by 24. Starting in April, we'll just start giving that amount every month for the next 24 months. And we'll see what God does. And so it's just one thing. And here's where it gets a little complicated. Is that we have folks in our church who are not givers. And so we're asking you to give, which means you're probably going to need to start small. Probably not going to just be able to start and go, okay, I wasn't giving anything, and I'm going to do a whole world shift, worldview shift, and then just start giving. That's probably not what's going to happen. I had giving forced on me at a young age. I had no choice in the matter. And so it was just a matter of, you want to live, you give, right? Live, give. So that's how it worked in my household. So it wasn't spiritual for me. It wasn't active worship. That came much, much later. And we'll talk about what that is. But for some of us, you didn't have that. And so we recognize there may be some smaller, some baby steps to all that. And that's fine. We'd love to help you with that. You just start small and learn how to be faithful. We have a bunch of folks who are not faithful. They give when they can. They give when it feels right, but they're not really faithful to it. And we're calling you to take, for maybe for the first time in your life, an intentional step. To look at the next 2 years and go, I'm going to be a part of this church. Not just show up, not just be a tangent, not just be involved over there, but be involved completely at the heart of what we're doing. And then we have some folks who have a lot of financial capacity. And you can give in a really significant way. And the fact is, you're very generous. You give in a bunch of places. But you've never viewed the local church as a place that was a worthy investment. And here's what I'm telling you, is that this is a worthy investment. Is that we do things local, we do things on this campus, we do things off this campus. We do things in the state, we do things around the world. I had a guy that I met with recently who is a high-profile leader in our community, goes to our church. He's like, hey, there's, you know, when I came to town, this is a ministry that's really important to me, and I really want to support that ministry. I'm like, that's great. I'm glad you support that ministry. We partner with that ministry. In fact, we train the leaders for that ministry. When they need leadership development, leadership training, they bring their leaders to us, and we train them. That's how closely we work with that ministry. So I'm glad that you think that ministry is great, and it is great. But here's what you also ought to know, is that the church that you go to props them up. I mean, this is what we're doing. We're working together with dozens of ministries, and all need to be considered valuable. And so we're saying this is a worthy investment. Even if it wasn't a worship issue, it's an investment strategy that's really important. And we need everyone in our church to pull together. Because the temptation is to say, what I would give makes no difference. But here's what I would tell you. When I say $15.7 million, we're like, that's a lot. But if every family, not individual, if every family in our church had a $40,000 family income. Now, that's not really true. It's closer to mid-50s. For our congregation is average household income. But if household income was around 40 and everybody were involved, okay, we'd be bringing in $17 to $20 million in the next 2 years, not 15.7. I mean, that's just if everybody, and you go, why does not so? Those are big numbers. I don't know. Let me just tell you, this church was started by people and funded by people in their mid-20s who gave $180 a month. The seats that you sit in, the benefits that you enjoy as coming to our church was given to you by people in their 20s who were pumped up when they could start giving $220 a month. I thought, we are killing it. I'm going to change the world. We're giving in the 200s now. And that is the truth. And they worked hard to be faithful with a little bit to make room for other folks and create opportunities for other folks, and you are those other folks. And so the little things do matter, and you get to be a part of something bigger yourself and create something for other folks. And so it is an act, not just an investment, it's an act of worship too. All right? Is that when I choose to part with my money in an act of obedience to God, then I'm choosing to worship Him rather than the stuff that He gives. Because I'm going to tell you something, I can worship some stuff. I tell you what, I don't worship stuff as much because I've got a bad habit of breaking stuff. But I can worship some security. I don't mind putting money in the bank, and I can worship that all day long. And so I'll choose that security over the one who gave me something to be secure with. So for the next 2 weeks, we want to talk about, we'll answer any questions about this over the next couple weeks. But we also want to say that when you're not giving, you're not a part, you're not really a part of the church, you're withholding something from the church, and you're also hurting yourself in the process. And so are there other places to give? Yeah, we give other places. There's a lot to do. But we just want you to be able to consider it in a thoughtful way, in an intentional way, a strategic way. Let me share with you a story from Jim and Sarah, and just let you tell their story, part of their story, in their own words. You can listen to this.
Yeah, we've been at Grace almost 4 years now. Through that time, we felt like we were progressing and growing as Christians and having a great time on that journey. Our marriage has always been great. We've never really had too many difficulties. We've been pretty happily married most of the way. Four kids, two grandchildren, and one on the way. But one of the things that we didn't do is we were what I would call tithing on the fringe. We kind of have been on the fringe for quite some time, and I personally hid from it, stayed away from it. We did like most people and tithed when we could, gave when we could, and quite honestly, when we when we did do that, we were probably compounding the credit card debt.
It doesn't matter the amount of money that you're making. It's because we started out with nothing, and it just seemed like with every increase, we always found something else to spend it on.
So that was easy.
It wasn't how much you're making. It was the priorities of where you're going to put God's resources that you give.
And finally, I was able to talk through it, recognize that it was a sin issue, a heart issue, and a discipleship element. We did everything except the right thing. And the right thing is to be intentional, make a plan, find a way, and do it. But we had to get rid of the consumer debt. We were piled high. And I think that's what Financial Peace was able to do to clean that debt out of the way so that we can tithe and we can give. It has reprioritized our thinking. You know, it used to be, when are we going to be able to get a vacation home? Or when are we going to be able to do this? And now it's, who needs help? What do we need to be doing with this? And how can we make a change? How can we make a difference? I know this, we've got it down now that giving is always going to be there. It has to be there. No matter what happens to us and where we're at, that's going to happen first. And we know how to do that. We have the tools to do it. Now we have a plan. Now we have a way to get there. And we're intentional. And we're very excited about that.
Thanks to Jim and Sarah for being willing to share their story. I mean, you hear it in their heart. They're not bragging about anything. They're just sharing with you their story, whether we were talking about a Bible study or community or being in a community group or what it's like to serve in some capacity. They're just telling you their discipleship story. Grab your Bible real quick and turn to Malachi chapter 3. I want to read this to us right before we go, and I want you to see it before we have a chance to sing together. And so we are doing good on time. I got a couple more minutes. And I just want to read this to you and introduce you to the spiritual side, part of the spiritual side, for how God views this issue. Because this raises, I think, some really good questions that have to be thought about. Page 574, if it's one of the Bibles that we've given out or that are in the seat in front of you or the pew in front of you. Verse Malachi chapter 3, page 574, verse 7. Now here's the context. This is God speaking through the prophet to his people, not pagans, not heathens. All right? So not people who don't know God, but people who do know God. So this, if this were written in modern times, it would be written to the church. It's written to the nation Israel, the faithful of the nation Israel, which makes it all that much more interesting. In verse 7, ever since the days of your ancestors, you have scorned my decrees and failed to obey them. It would be like saying to most of you, God saying, ever since I can remember, you never come to church. You're like, never come to church? Come to church all the time. You never come to church and you're never in community. You're like, I lead a community group. How do you say I missed church like 7 times last year? How can you say I never come to church? And so that's how shocking his statements are. They can't even make sense of it. Now return to me and I'll return to you, says the Lord of heaven's armies, which is strong, vital language for him. But here's what they said. But you ask, and he's kind of asking the question for him, how can we return when we never went away? They're like, how are you telling me to come to church when I've been in church? How are you telling me to go to community group when I'm always in community group? How are you telling me to read the Bible when I always read the Bible? They're like, God, he's anticipating the fact that he doesn't seem to be making sense to them. They have been a very committed group of Jews, very obedient, and they would say, we have kept all the rules. But his point is, he goes, you have kept all those rules, but there's one aspect of your spiritual life that you have ignored. Verse 8, he says, should people cheat God? Yet you have cheated me. But you ask, what do you mean? And that does raise the question, how do you cheat someone who created everything and owns everything? It's a really good question. And someone who doesn't need anything, I mean, where would he spend it? Does he ever have to run to the store and get a Diet Mountain Dew like I do because he doesn't like coffee and gotta have caffeine? He's like, God, where's my $1.60? I gotta have this caffeine right now. Where does God do that? Does he need $1.60? Does he need anything? Is there any store he can go spend money? He goes, but should people cheat God? Yet you cheated me. And you ask, what do you mean? When do we ever cheat you? You have cheated me of the tithes and offerings due to me. Now, there's a great question here about what is a tithe that means 10%. Is that an Old Testament idea? It's not really a New Testament idea. Yep, we got all that. That's not what we're dealing with. I'm not saying that everybody's got to give. We do have a 10% gift from Abraham 400 years before the law. That's not the issue, okay? That how much is the percentage is not the issue for this moment. But you have cheated me of the tithes and the offerings that are due. And so here's what he's saying. He is elevating the financial piece right next to all the other rules and discipleship and faithfulness and shepherding and everything else that they're supposed to be doing and be a part of. He's expanded it to that level. Not to mention, we showed that it does ministry. But he's saying, if you want to be faithful, part of your faithfulness is around your resources. Verse 9. He says, you are under a curse for your whole nation has been cheating me. You go, well, I mean, does that mean we're under a curse? Hey, another issue for another day. But here's what I do think the point is that there are consequences for them in ignoring God around this issue, and there are consequences for us if we are not faithful. He's saying, you need to be faithful in this area, and we'll talk about what that means. It's not going to be exactly the same as it was for Israel, but you need to be faithful in this area, and if you're not, there are consequences that you need to give God something to honor. Verse 10, bring all the tithes into the storehouse so there will be enough food in my temple. If you do, says the Lord of heaven's armies, I will open the windows of heaven for you, and I will pour out a blessing so great you won't have the room to take it in. Now, notice this last phrase. Put me to the test. He is called. Notice what he's saying. He's saying, you're acting like you're faking faithfulness in all these other areas, but you're not faithful to me. And this is what I said last week when we looked at Acts 2. When it says you get to the point where they shared everything they had, you can't fake that. You either trust God with what you have or you don't trust God with what you have. You ain't faking that piece. You go, well, some people are so rich they can give and it doesn't mean anything. Right, but that's not most of us. So you can fake up Bible study and prayer and community. You can fake a lot of things, but you can't fake this. And he says, you don't trust me. Then he says that last phrase, so put me to the test. You go, what is the New Testament counterpart? Matthew 6. We'll talk about it later. But Matthew 6, where he says, the birds, I take care of the birds. Okay, they don't worry. Are you not more important than birds? I take care of you. I take care of birds. You're more important than birds. I take care of you. And he goes through a whole deal about worry and trust. The issue is trust. So here's what we have. We have hundreds and hundreds of people in our church who would say, I trust God with my soul for all eternity. But I don't trust him with something as little as money right now. Something about that is hypocritical, inauthentic, and just plain out not true. It's just not true. You can't say that you trust God for all eternity with something as important as your soul, but something that's not very important like money. Luke calls it a little thing. He goes, if you're faithful in a little thing, I'll make you master of many things or bigger things. So Luke, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, calls money a little thing. So if we can't be faithful with a little thing, how will we be faithful with a big thing? And if we don't trust him with this little thing now, then we really don't trust him with our hearts, with our souls, with our salvation. It's just that money helps expose that. Verse 11, your crops will be abundant. I will guard them from insects and disease. Your grapes will not fall from the vine before they are ripe. Then all nations will call you blessed, for your land will be such a delight, says the Lord. You're like, well, he's not making that promise to us right now. I hear you, but here's the principle behind it compared to Matthew 6, is that God takes care of his people, right? God takes care of his people. And I have never seen anyone, I've seen hundreds and hundreds of people start to trust God with their finances, and I've not seen any of them prove God to be a liar. But I've seen tons and tons of people prove Him to be faithful and show that God is not guaranteed. There's not a contract here where I do this and He's going to make me rich and I give Him you $10, He's going to give me $1,000 back. That's not what this passage is talking about. You can twist it. Guys on TV, twist it. That's not what He's saying here. But what He is saying is that when we don't honor Him in every area, then there's a part of Him that doesn't honor us. But He does love us and care about us, and He can protect us and take care of us. And for us to say that we trust Him with our souls, we don't trust Him with our money, is just hypocritical. And so tons of people in our congregation have proven God to be faithful. I've never had anybody show that God was unfaithful. And here's what I would tell you that's important for me and for you, is that there's something that Bible study does for you that nothing else does. There is something that community does for your soul that nothing else does. There is something that service does in your soul that nothing else can replace. And there is something that being faithful with your finances does to your soul that nothing else does. There's a work that God does in your soul when He's touching your finances and He controls it, that does something in your soul that's powerful that nothing else can touch. So I close with this. I pray and we'll be done. Is that we are calling our congregation to be faithful, generous, and obedient with everything He's given to us. And some of you, in the next few weeks, you're going to want to be a part of that. And that is incredible. It's great. And some of us, you are not. But just be clear that you are the one who gets to make that decision. 2 Corinthians says, I don't get to make that decision for you. Nobody should put pressure on you to give more or less. Is that you get to make that decision. What I am going to, and I'm going to ask you to make that decision. What I'm going to ask you to not do is stop faking. Stop acting like you're something that you're not, because that is something that just not only does not honor God, but it makes you miserable and causes you to become self-deceptive. And so for some that just want a place to come to church, I mean, that's fine. That's fine. We've had that for a long time. We're going to have that. So if you just want to come and this is a place for you to attend and watch, but we at least want to articulate the idea that you are missing out on something. There's too many people that can give testimony to the fact they've been where you are and now they're somewhere else. And they're saying that's a good thing. So we at least want you to know there is a choice that you make as we call our congregation to be faithful. So as I pray and as we sing together, just ask God to do the work that only He can do. If everything I said is wrong and it doesn't matter and it doesn't get, okay, then throw all that out. If God's doing something different in you, let Him do something different. But if there's something about His word that is right and is true, then there's no need to be afraid of the God who loves you. Send His Son to die for you. There's nothing there for you to fear. All right, let's pray together. Father, we do ask that You continue to lead us and show us that there is work to be done in us that we cannot do ourselves, that there are things that I think and feel that just aren't right sometimes, and they need to be clarified. And that for those of us who just want to ride, we just want to attend, Father, would You open our eyes to be able to see that there is a much better way? Being a part of something and being able to contribute with my life and with my heart, with my soul, with my energy, and even with my finances, there is something about that that is powerful, that does a work in our congregation and in the world, but more importantly, does a work in our own souls. And so, Father, would You open our eyes to that, and would You lead us on that? We ask it in Your name. Amen.